All right, everybody, welcome to another episode of Tunes Mate, episode 81. I'm Mark.
And I'm Ray.
And Ray, this week, Taylor Swift dropped her latest album, and everyone rushed out and got it. And it's interesting. Are we in Swiftie mania? Is this the pinnacle? Because we had Elvis, we had the Beatles. Now we're in this era of Taylor Swift. And what does it all mean?
That's the big question, right? I was given the question last fall to think about, is Taylor Swift bigger than the Beatles? And you know me, whenever anybody claims that, right, bigger than the Beatles, that like puts my hair on edge, right? You know, I remember, you know, Oasis back in the 90s when they said that, and it was like, you whiny little twits, you're not bigger than the Beatles. You know, I just like, I get all like, my nerves get going and I start getting defensive about it. And it's not that I'm like this, I mean, I like the Beatles. I grew up on the Beatles. I'm not like, you know, the Beatles aren't like that deep to my identity. It's just their cultural significance was so profound 60 years ago that I just, you know, you have to me, there's some bars to cross before you get into that conversation. And you mentioned Elvis. Elvis is in that conversation. And I don't know that anybody else is. You know, certainly we've seen artists who have had success for a while. Maybe Michael Jackson would be. But even like Madonna, you know, I don't know that I would make that case. And so I was reluctant to say, well, Taylor Swift is, you know, as big as the Beatles. But you can't make the case now because you really have to look like 20 years from now when she's been out there for 35 years. And is it still lasting, right? There's still like connections to the Beatles today that are lasting 60 years later. So you really can't judge it. But boy, based on everything I've seen in the past week or so, I'm willing to accept that she might get there. And that she, or that she's there now, like the Beatles were in like 63, 64. She, you know, this album released. I mean, everywhere I went, I was seeing references to it. I turn on the radio and they're having Taylor Swift listening parties. You know, kids are, you know, being late to school. I knew coworkers who were running out to get it. You know, that she's put out, that people are buying the CD and the vinyl and then the double album vinyl. I fully expect that she's going to have the whole top 10 like she did that one time. And I think if not the top 20, she's got that moment. You mentioned, are we at that moment? And I think this is a key moment to see her significance. And I'd say, you know, this past year, it's almost a year and a half now since Midnight's released. You know, she had a whole string of hits. She did some of her own versions of old albums in there that gave her more hits. Mm-hmm. You know, I like to joke that she won the Super Bowl, right? You know, I mean, there was that whole thing in the fall with her and Travis Kelce and bringing fans to football. And I've seen it firsthand, fans going to football who weren't other watching football. And then, of course, the Kansas City won the Super Bowl, just, you know, like turned it into this grand story. So I just, and so now, and that's when she announced that she had this new album coming out in April. And so sure enough, here it is. And there was all the hype and all the build up to it. And I remember seeing that, you know, Billboard reported that the album sold 1.6 million in its first day and had 243.4 million on-demand streams. I mean, these are incredible numbers.
Yeah. The couple things I thought when you were going was, I remember for a while, Kanye West was, I'm bigger than the Beatles.
Yeah, don't get me started on that, dude.
So, well, he likes to stir things up. But the other interesting thing that you brought up was the fact that if we compare them to the Beatles, is that I remember vividly, if you hear interviews with John, Paul, George, and Ringo, is that they said that the screams were so loud that they couldn't hear the music they were playing. So that was interesting. But now I believe definitely Taylor Swift has a sound system that could muffle the screams. So there's one difference. And I think the other thing is the social media and all the ways that you can self-promote this prior to it being released that Taylor completely took advantage of, being able to use not only traditional network television, but then all of the social media networks. And then obviously you know, all the Swifties were able to, just like, you know, the Beatlemaniacs were able to continue that. So it seems like there's a couple new factors this time that have added into the ability to accomplish this. Now, as you said, if that day when you go ahead and crack open the Billboard Bible and you look at all the hits that are run down from all Taylor's hits, you're going to see a lot of number ones. You're going to see a lot of connections in there. But once again, that book is still being written. So to your point, we are probably right on the mountaintop with this, but there's more to come. And with this album, it definitely laid the next round of where this is going.
Yeah. No, those are, I really appreciate your points, because I think you've hit it on a really key aspect of this, and that's that the situation has changed from 60 years ago. And I really appreciate your point about social media and the means that are available to promote this before it comes out. When the Beatles released a record, you know, when they hit the American shores and first released their records, and even, you know, in 1969, 70, when they were releasing their last stuff while they were together, the means that were available to promote that, they had certainly perfected some, they had worked on some of that stuff over the 60s. If you look at the 1960s, a lot of modern record promotion stuff developed between, say, 1955 and 1970. And they took advantage of all that. But there is so much more available to Taylor Swift. And one of the keys to her popularity and her genius, as it were, is her ability to use that. She and her team know how to effectively use social media, other promotional aspects, you know, connecting to organizations like Target, and using connections to other artists to do that. She's very well equipped and knows how, and again, she and her team know how to do that. And so your point about the promotion is really, really, I think, key to this. And it tells us even more about her, because we live in such a fragmented media market now, in a way that's like the late, I think we've talked about this before, you know, when we talked about, like, we've talked about, for instance, that in the late 50s, you release singles, and then eventually you put an album together. And, you know, by the 70s, that had changed to, you put an album out and you then release a few singles off of it. And Taylor Swift still does that part, where she releases an album and singles off of it. But we've got a return to a more to a fragmented market. So in the 50s, there was a national market for music, Frank Sinatra, Nat King Cole, etc. But there was a lot of regional fragmentation. By 1970, a lot of that has been synthesized, and you've got an even fuller national machine, as it were, in the music industry. Not that there weren't regional markets or alternatives, and there was, but you had less fragmentation. And now we're in an era of more fragmentation again, but it's a different kind of fragmentation. And what you pointed out with social media is one aspect of that. We have fragmentation, and people listen to very different kinds of things, and they experience music differently because of that, but we have access to it in a way that we didn't 65 years ago or 60 years ago when the Beatles were hitting. You didn't have access to that fragmentation. You know, me in Ohio didn't know what was going on in Alabama or Oklahoma or Seattle or whatever. Now I can, and I can even get live feeds of it, and I can find it out and everything with that. And so that's another part of what she's done, is that in a fragmented market, she and her team are able to bring elements of that fragmentation together and get her promoted across those various fragmented markets.
And what's fascinating to me, and this goes down another line of questioning. So we talked about the success that Taylor Swift has had and the release of this new album. But then on the other half is, if you think about the Beatles, the breakup point, many say it was that Yoko came and broke up the Beatles, and that's what happened in 1970, and they were done. With Taylor, could the advent of a Olivia Rodrigo, who many say is a copycat, and have actually even had to cite a Taylor song in one of their hits and say, yes, actually, I was inspired by Taylor. Is it the fact that she could keep just working with the same collaborators and creating similar music and not changing enough, as we saw the folks like Madonna, even though she isn't in the same class. The Beatles, for example, many say that they change from album to album. You can watch them move and change, and oh, they tried something new this time. They went out to, you know, India, and they now they're using a sitar. So what is going, in your essence, is, we said that Taylor's going in the right line, but are there threats out there that could cause a decline with Taylor and the Swiftie mania?
You know, it's funny. A lot of what you said fits in with, I recently showed in one of my classes, we were talking about special occasion speeches, and I always show a commencement address. And I chose to pick Taylor Swift's commencement address to New York University in 2022. It's really a good example of various elements of commencement addresses, how to be entertaining in one, even though you go 25 minutes, and also of her storytelling abilities. And so I'd encourage people to, you can get it on YouTube and go check it out. But a lot of what you just said relates to that. And one of the messages she has is kind of, you're going to make mistakes. You're not, you know, you're not going to know what's going to happen, all that kind of stuff. And that's it. Like we've talked about this kind of idea before. You know, artists who endure, they change. They don't just keep putting out the same stuff, but they change in the way that works with what the culture is wanting at that moment. We can think of plenty of artists who changed from album to album or from time period to time period, but their change was not consistent with what audiences wanted in change. And so they developed and they changed and they did all that, but they still faded because what they were doing wasn't, you know, in line with what, where music culture was going, American music or British music. Tears for Fears is a very good example, I think, of this. You know, when you mm-hmm. them hitting in the mid-80s and, you know, and by their next album, The Seeds of Love, which had some moderate success and which, of course, is my favorite, you know, they had changed a bit from what they did. And then you can move on. Well, they broke up, but then you move on to other things. There's similarities there, but there's change in what they did. But they didn't change in a way that was, you know, consistent with what society wanted. Madonna, you mentioned, you know, Madonna changed. And there was constant reinvention of Madonna. And it worked for years and years and years. And I mean, I think that there's an argument to be had that it still works to some degree, that inevitably in her 50s and 60s, there was going to be a decline in popularity anyway. So, you know, in a way, Madonna's kind of weathered that pretty well. You know, the Beatles, as you said, they, from album to album, they changed. And, you know, the whole Yoko thing, you know, there's all kinds of opinions. I think Paul and John were moving musically in different directions anyway. And so I think it was inevitable. Maybe, you know, the relationship with Yoko helped make it happen a year or two before it was going to. I don't know. But, you know, I think they were moving in different directions, which, of course, is what we see in bands all the time, right? You know, somebody, you know, we have musical differences and we move in different ways. So the question is, I mean, Taylor's already shown the ability to do this. She started off as a country act. And she talks about this in that NYU speech. She was country and then she was pop and then she was a bit alternative. And she's done folk music, and she, you know, so she's reinvented herself in a number of ways. There's some similarities, though, as well. There's always sort of the singing about relationships and, you know, hearts broken and stuff like that. And so there's enough similarity with enough difference that it keeps working. So the question going before it, and I don't think any of us, even Taylor, can know the answer, is what's society going to want? And is she going to change in a way that's consistent with that? And that's going to be driven by a few things, including, what does she want? You know, she may decide, I've had this grand success. I want to do some other things and I don't care whether they're popular or not, which is what has happened with some folks. And so, you know, whether Olivia Rodrigo, I don't think there's any threat. I think that Taylor doesn't think about it as a threat. She seems to be just enjoying what's going on. As we think about artists who might threat, be a quote-unquote threat to her sort of ascendancy to the queenship of pop music, you know, inevitably it's going to happen. Inevitably, something is going to come along and take over. The questions are, does it happen on Taylor's terms or not Taylor's terms? Does she care or not? And when and what's going to cause that, et cetera. And so, you know, we don't know. But I think we can look at what happens over the next decade And if she sustains any kind of this, then that argument that, you know, she's right up with the Beatles and Elvis and Michael Jackson, and maybe Madonna's in that conversation. I'm kind of talking myself into that. You know, there's an argument there. But as you said, we're kind of at that moment.
And what's interesting is when you were talking about that, two things popped in my head. One is the artificial intelligence revolution. So there's been a lot of discussion of, well, AI, because most songs out there are very formulaic, that AI could easily reproduce them and create a hit. And then who do you credit? Is it AI? So I think that could be one part of it, that now that could be adding into the mix of hit song. And then the other thing I started thinking about was the fact that, I don't know if you saw this, but she inducted Carole King into the Rock Hall a couple years ago. Did you see that?
I didn't see that. So
she inducted her, and before she inducted her, I believe she sang one of her songs, and it was probably one of the most brilliant covers I've seen. And I started thinking, maybe the next step is, just like Van Halen went out and did Diver Down, a bunch of covers, and Rod Stewart goes out and does, you know, Pennies from Heaven, whatever his remake is of oldies, is maybe there's a, you know, there's some point of her career where she'll shift to covers. Because I will tell you, if you listen to that cover and you go back, if you look that one up, it sounded like a completely different song having her do it.
You know, I did. I just looked at it. I'm obviously not listening to it because we're recording this right now, but I see it. It was Will You Love Me Tomorrow. And, you know, I mean, it's fitting to have Taylor Swift paying tribute to Carole King. I think, I mean, Carole King was songwriter before she was, you know, hit maker herself. And she was part of the Brill Building in the early 60s with Neil Sedaka and, you know, then James Taylor and all these other, you know, that was sort of the California side then too. But, you know, the 60s hit making machine, she was part of that. And then, of course, released stuff on her own. But storytelling element, I think Swift embodies that. My songs tell stories. I mean, all songs do, but there's a real craftship to that. And so, you know, I don't know. I mean, the idea of her doing an album of covers could probably be a way to introduce people to music, because that's a sort of another aspect of this that I've been picking up on. You know that one of my favorite albums of all time is Hats by the Blue Nile from 1989. And she references the song The Downtown Lights, which was the most prominently played video and probably the most known songs from that album. She references that in Guilty as Sin on her latest album. And there are already stories out there about how Taylor Swift has introduced a whole new population of folks to the Blue Nile. And they even interviewed band members like Paul Buchanan from the Blue Nile. And they're like, you know, it's basically, well, hey, yeah, you know, if that gets more people listening, that's great. And so that's one thing that she has been shown to be able to do, is the ability to, if she recommends something, and this is why that whole conspiracy theory about the presidential election came up during the football season and stuff, because there's an acknowledgement that if she recommends something or she talks about some product or some artist or something, you know, and then again, this even relates back to the, you know, she working with Olivia Rodrigo and Olivia Rodrigo being inspired by her. I mean, if she does that, there's a whole group of people who are going to go check it out. And so you can't dismiss that. That's an inevitable part of her legacy at this point.
Yeah. And what's interesting about that is, so if you think about that, it's sort of like Oprah.
Yep.
If Oprah says something, everybody goes out and does it. So there's now that effect of being able to suggest something, and then all of a sudden everyone is wearing it or listening to it, or, you know, it's her endorsement.
Yep.
So there's a lot to come with Taylor Swift, but with this latest edition, this latest musical release, it's right now, the sales are off the charts, and we will see what hits come from it, but you know there's going to be one. And then you also know that this is going to continue to fuel her whole concert touring schedule, which we didn't even mention that she had one of the top grossing films of last year. And that also drove people to the theater to listen, to watch, to pretend they're at the concert because they can't afford the $1,000 tickets that it costs to go see her. So there once again, many similarities to the Beatles. The Beatles had a bunch of movies, obviously different than Taylor, but once again, there's another connection.
Yep. Well, and your point about Oprah is spot on. I mean, I remember when Oprah was sued by the beef industry because she made a comment about, you know, not eating beef. And the acknowledgement was, you are so influential that you saying this is like automatically like loses us customers. And so, and then you mentioning the concerts, you know, and the movie, you know, and she's done some acting, you know, she was in Cats, the movie version of that. She acts in her videos as well, but she, you know, there's a bit of an acting side there. But her concert, I think that her concert this past year was the highest grossing concert tour in pop music history. And I think I also read that she's the first music artist to ever become a billionaire and the first to ever do it simply based off of, you know, just being a music artist. And so, yeah, it's all there and there's so much there. And so there's so many parallels about her influence, about the mania that goes with it and that go to the Beatles and maybe beyond, that this is our future that we look at with Taylor.
Well, there's much to come and I can't wait to see the creativity and all the other ideas that are going to come out, even with videos and some of the other cultural phenomenons that come out of Taylor Swift. So I hope everyone is enjoying the new release and we'll definitely be putting more of Taylor onto our blog. And I know you've been not only keeping up with That Was 5 Years Ago and the Daily 80s Flashback and 50 Years Ago, and we've been putting up classic artists. Taylor isn't there yet. The classic artist cutoff is 25 years. So once she hits 25 years, I'm going to consider her classic. But that's why there's so much more coming from Taylor.
Yeah, so much more to come. And, you know, as just like Tunes Make, we've got more to come and we'll keep putting it up there for you.
We want you to follow our podcast and subscribe to our blog. And we thank you and we hope that you send us your ideas. If you have any ideas, we do have some other interviews that are coming up around the corner and we're hoping to bring you some of those new music artists. And then also Ray and I have some other ideas up our sleeve that will be coming out soon. So thank you for your support. And once again, I'm Mark.
And I'm Ray.
And we will see you next time.